Today is April 5th in 2024, and we welcome you to our Chapter 49 podcast. We try to be weekly, but didn't make it last week, and we'll explain why in just a moment. But it's good to have you with us. We thank you for taking a little bit of your time to share some time with us on the Chapter 49 podcast. My name is Larry Lannon. I'm a volunteer with Chapter 49 and a volunteer in the area of communications. Also, I have been retired for, it's been several years now. I've been retired for a while. One man who is not yet retired, but may in a few years, Duncan Giles. Welcome back, Duncan.
Thanks, Larry. It's always good to be here. And yes, that will be retired. Not could be.
Yes, you made it pretty clear you're going to fill out the rest of your time as chapter president, which runs through, 2.5 years, something like that?
September 30th of 26.
Yes, you've already got the date. You've got the date circled at this point, I can see. But thanks for joining us today. We have a lot to talk about. And I don't know about you, but I apologize. We didn't have a podcast last week. But I'm sorry, being a grandfather is kind of an important thing. And my granddaughter had a one-year birthday. And, Duncan, one-year-olds have birthdays, so the party is really more for everybody at the party. The one-year-old is really not quite sure what's going on. Kind of sense that something big's happening, but it's always fun. And we had a good time going out to South Dakota and visiting my daughter's family. So thanks for your indulgences on that. But I know you've been busy over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, well, first off, how dare you leave us to go to a, family birthday party for a one-year-old. And what I discovered with one-year-olds is I tell people, what do you get somebody that young? You don't need to get them a present. Just get them the wrapping paper in an empty box. They're as happy as can be, and they don't need a gift in that.
That's true. Christmas Day is a lot that way, where the one-year-olds are playing with the paper that's been torn apart, and the presents are kind of on the side. Yes, I hear you.
Exactly. As always, there are things that are going on both locally and nationally that need to be attended to each and every day. So that's what we work on, both NTU National and myself and the rest of our chapter here, do what we need to do to make sure that things run as smoothly as possible and the employees are protected and their rights are served.
Another day in the life of an NTEU chapter president. That's what you're saying, I guess. Huh? Well, when we left the podcast 2 weeks ago, it was a bit of a cliffhanger because the budget had not been officially approved. We had been assured, of course, we get assured all the time, right? We assured that the budget was going to be passed on time and that there would be no even small several hours shutdown. And that's what happened. I think we had one thing going in our favor, Duncan, because in this last budget round a couple of weeks ago, the House had passed the measure, went to the Senate. The Senate was getting ready for a recess. And I think every senator was kind of giving each other the evil eye, like, how don't you dare hold this thing up? We all want to go home, right?
That's it exactly. It was one of those things where the House passed it in a bipartisan manner, and then they got the heck out of town for their recess. And so then it passed over to the Senate, and they were like, well, if you're going to have amendments or want to change something, you're going to have a problem because everybody in the House is gone. And if you want to delay this, there's going to be several of us that would like to talk to you in a darkened room. So I think sanity in this case basically won out, and they went ahead and voted. And again, this, our budget, which included many other agencies, passed with a wide bipartisan margin.
And again, the budget has been finalized halfway into the fiscal year, which began October 1st. Remind everybody just how important it is to have an approved final budget.
Yeah, it's absolutely important. Things like, everything is hung up. You don't know about your hiring plans. Traveling, training, things of that nature. People are like going, well, I'm supposed to go to training next week. Are we going to be able to do it? Well, we're not sure because we've got, a continuing resolution as opposed to a regular budget. So a budget is hugely, hugely, hugely important for us to have every year to know exactly how much money we're going to have to spend for things like, you know, hiring, retention, you know, anything from rent, you know, improvement projects, projects from our folks in facilities, IT improvements, things of that nature. We all need that money to know what we're going to be able to do. The money from the past IRA, you know, has helped us. The overall money has helped us, but we need to have a steady budget every year to be able to fund our day-to-day operations.
Okay, so the budget is in place now for the remainder of the year going through September 30th, just in time, of course, to start talking about the next year's budget, but that's already started as we are finally getting approval of the current year budget. It's just the way things work these days. And this being an election year, I would suspect that we will have a continuing resolution October 1st, at least for a while, but time will tell on that. Let's get into something that just happened a few days before we record this on April 5th. When we've interviewed and had as guests on our program people like, you know, Ken Moffitt, our national negotiator, national president, Doreen Greenwald, they have talked about this whole issue of Schedule F. And I hate to use that shorthand because it doesn't mean a lot to people who don't get into the weeds of federal employee issues. Schedule F, to be just blunt about it, is whether or not we're going to have a civil service which has some guarantees of a merit system or can be fired at any time. Schedule F proposals in the past have tried to increase by large amounts the number of people who are at-will employees, could be fired for any reason. Civil service employees have those civil service protections to keep that from happening. NTEU and other employee organizations throughout the civil service have been pushing the Office of Personnel Management, OPM, to issue some guidelines and rules on Schedule F. Those have just been released. Tell us why that is important to somebody listening or watching this podcast.
Yeah, people may say, you know, what does Schedule F mean to me? I'm just a regular employee. Well, the problem is that the discussion among some folks in the, that may be coming in a different administration are saying that the Schedule F could go down to anybody who makes policy. And they were talking about a much lower level than anything we've ever seen before in the past. So it was very worrisome to all of us to figure out, okay, what's going to be happening with this, how far are they going to go? We need to make sure that this doesn't occur. And so our national office, led by our national president, Doreen Greenwald, as you said, Ken Moffitt was instrumental in writing this up, Dan Casper, and a lot of folks at our NTU national office were, you know, pushing OPM to make it a regulation to make it much more difficult for any administration, no matter what the party, to make it more difficult to strip away the civil service protections and put in people who are loyal to a particular party or person, because that's what we do not want. You know, I get really tired of hearing about the deep state. You know, the government, the federal government is the deep state. No, they're just a bunch of career professionals who are trying to do the best they can for the American public that they serve. That's what the, you know, 99.9% of the people who are here are doing this for. So there is no deep state, there is no conspiracy, and they're trying to do the best job that they can. When you get in people who have particular objectives that aren't to service the public, but to help a particular party or person, that's when you get into the old reward system, and that is a bad, bad thing. The Boss Tweeds system of the 1850s in New York, you can't have that, especially in civil service. And I'm extremely proud that NTU was at the forefront of pushing OPM on this to make sure that we get as much protection as we can without a statute coming from a Congress that'll pass a law to make it more difficult to do this.
Well, yes, and I, you and I have talked about this extensively in the past, and it hasn't changed. I have always said that I've seen situations in Indiana state government where we had the spoil system, you know, where the office of the governor, if it goes from one party to another, everybody's fired and all new people come in. And most of the people coming in may have good intentions, but they don't know how to do the job. And it will take a year or two or maybe longer for these people to understand how to run an agency and do the job that needs to be done. So this whole idea of Schedule F, when you hear Schedule F, that means taking away civil service protections for thousands of people working in the federal government. That's what Schedule F is about. And it's a bad idea. And yes, Duncan's comments about what we hear this phrase deep state, and people who have delved into this, what does it mean? You're talking about civil servants, as Duncan mentioned. He and I have both have this experience. My father worked for the Defense Department most of his adult life. You know, we've seen civil servants that are definitely dedicated to serving the public, and that's one reason that we all have these jobs. And we all take that seriously. And that, you know, you got over 1 million people working in any you know, operation. You're not going to have everybody's going to be perfect, and we have to deal with all that. But the fact is, by and large, federal employees, I think, do a pretty good job, and we do the job that we are given by the laws passed by Congress, and by what the president tells us to do as an executive branch agency. So. That's my speech, and I think we're both saying the same thing. So basically, these OPM rules that have come out on Schedule F are a positive thing, meaning if some president and or Congress comes in and they, it's going to take a lot of extra effort to change the civil service. Right. Is that the bottom line, Duncan?
Absolutely. That's a very good way of phrasing it. They're not going to be able to just say, okay, we're going to take this down, you know, and there's always going to be political appointees in federal organizations at the top. That's understood, not a problem. You know, you have that, and we've had that since the creation of civil service. So that's not an issue. We're talking about people. Well, you know, sometimes I implement policy or help with policy. So does that mean that, you know, I could be replaced under Schedule F? It, you know, you just didn't know. And with these rules in place, it's going to make it much, much tougher to be able to reach out and get those people who aren't considered loyalists, so to speak.
Yeah, and think about the IRS, for example. In the IRS, there are, you know how many political appointees there are in the IRS? A total of 2. The Commissioner of Internal Revenue and the man who serves as the chief counsel or the chief counsel attorneys. Those are the only 2 presidential appointees that serve at the pleasure of the president. And there's not a problem with that. They are running the agency, and that's allowed. Okay, let's move on to something else, Duncan. I mentioned before that I do write as kind of a volunteer at local news blog where I live in Fishers, Indiana, and had a recent podcast where I brought in the mayor, the police chief, and the fire chief. They all talked about what they're going to face in the solar eclipse. The Indianapolis area, and where I live in Fishers, Indiana, will be in something called the Path of Totality. What that means is we will see a full eclipse. The moon will completely shut out the sun for a period of a few minutes and move in and out during that period. But there'll be a full, total solar eclipse in Indianapolis, Fishers, Indiana, and the whole swath. I remember when I first wrote about this on my news blog, got a message from somebody who lived in, I think it was a small town in Kentucky. In 2017, there was a solar eclipse, and they were in the Path of Totality. He said once the eclipse was over, every road in their town was backlogged. It was a total gridlock, not just the main roads. Every other road, because the GPSs were taking different roads, every side street was gridlocked. It was something he's never seen before. So every community on that path of totality, including Indianapolis, where I live in Fisher, that whole area, will be impacted by this path of totality. And where I live, that's going to the peak of the solar eclipse will be around what, 3:15, right around that time. Of course, yeah. That's the time when people are starting to leave work, right? Now, they closed the schools because they didn't want the school buses out sitting in traffic all this time. So the schools have figured this out and did this a long time ago. Our spring break was elongated by one day to work out this whole issue of trying to keep the school buses off the road during this solar eclipse. But there is an aspect of this that can impact federal employees in that path of totality or near that. So what are you hearing as far as agencies like IRS? Do they have any thoughts about this?
Well, that's one of the things that has greatly concerned me as I've delved more and more into this. My awesome wife is, really looking forward to this. So, and sharing her interest, I was looking into it. And as you said, where there have been other instances of being in this totality, you have gridlock. And then when you see things like schools closing, hotels charging out the yin yang, because there are people coming from all over the world, not just the United States, all over the world to see this and be a part of this. And, businesses closing down. We have a lot of folks that can work telework. So I would urge every manager out there to let folks work telework on Monday if you're in the totality sphere. But my concern has been to the folks that are, working in, if we have anybody in one of the service centers that's in totality, or, people that aren't working telework that are in a call site, or the folks who are in the tax who don't, our walk-in offices who do not have the opportunity to do this. And so yesterday, me being me, I sent an email to some high-ups in wage and investment and CC'd the commissioner, basically explaining how bad this potentially could be to our employees, because I can absolutely foresee employees, and I'll just use Indianapolis as an example. If you're getting off at the regular time and this, the eclipse goes down, the problem is not when everybody's coming in, because everybody comes in at different times. Some people come in a day or two beforehand. Some people come in a couple of hours and all that. But as you said, everybody leaves at the same time. Now, Indianapolis has a great history of, knowing what to do with traffic when everybody leaves. We have this little event in May that we have that we invite a few friends over called the Indianapolis 500, which is the greatest spectacle in racing and the greatest one-day live sporting event for attendance. So we know how to handle traffic. But that's on a day when you're not having people working. Everybody around knows that you don't go out in the roads during the time, when people are going to the speedway or when the race is over because of the traffic. You're not going to have that opportunity when people are leaving work. So I have, and I understand this is the end of the filing season, and it may not seem to be the best day to do this. But I have urged the folks to, if they can't close the tax for the day, at least do an early release so these folks can get home. I don't think we're going to have that many people coming into the tax. I don't think we're going to have that many people that would need to be in our accounts management office. They can work from home for a day or give them administrative leave. We're not talking about a ton of people that will be impacted overall for the service. But I just want to make sure that none of these people are stuck for hours, literally hours, in their cars trying to get home. So I've urged the higher ups that be to take this into consideration and possibly do something. I don't know if they will. I know that national NTU our national negotiator, Randy Ralston, who deals with wage and investment, national president, Doreen Greenwald, and our chief of negotiations, Ken Moffitt, have all been having discussions about this with the IRS. Haven't heard anything yet. I'm still hopeful that by the end of the day, we will hear something at least modifying it, because we don't, you know, if we want to be the best place to work, which is what you always hear, we're striving to be the best place to work. You don't put your employees in possible harm's way. You don't want to sit them out in traffic for, you know, 3 to 4 hours while they're trying to get home because of these events. And again, it's only for those, we're looking at this only for those who are in the path of the totality of the eclipse. So it's a very narrow band across the United States. But for those impacted employees, we need to make sure that we do right by them, and we're trying to get that done.
Yeah, you know, Duncan, I saw some Indianapolis Police Department official interviewed on TV the other day who said, you know, as you mentioned, the Indianapolis 500 draws 400,000 people in just a few square mile area. It's and yeah, that's a, I've been to it several times, and so have you, and you know what the traffic, it's not when people come in, although that's some one challenge. When the race is over, everybody leaves at once, and that is a challenge. This one police official said, this being in the path of totality of a solar eclipse is like having several Indianapolis 500s going on all over town at the same time. So that's the challenge that IMPD, the Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department, has. And even my local police department here in Fishers, a suburb of Indianapolis of 100,000 people, they're going to have police officers scattered all throughout the area, knowing they may not be able to respond if they're at a central location. You know, and they're going to be using drones to figure out traffic. I mean, it's going to be one of those things. So this is, as you said, something that will only impact a sliver of the country. But where it does have an impact, it will have a major impact. So thank you for bringing that up. And as always, Duncan is not shy about sending messages to the top management and copying the commissioner as well. Let's go on to something else, because we're into the tax season. It's April 5th, the 15th for most people. There are a few exceptions around the country, but April 15th is the deadline for most people to file their taxes and get their taxes paid. We want to give you one more reminder. We've done it before. We'll do it again. IRS employees have a very special responsibility when it comes to complying with the tax laws. Let's give people that reminder you always give them, Duncan.
Yep, it's just one of those things. Being for the service, working with the service, you do have, you know, a special, you know, thing under the statute that you do have to file on time and pay on time. So by all means, you know, for any of the IRS employees listening, because we always have newer employees listening either here or elsewhere across the country that may not have, you know, been with the service for a year and don't know how serious this is, make sure that you file your taxes on time. Whether you're getting a refund, whether you owe, at least do the filing. If you do owe, make sure that you pay. If you can't pay in full, and I would urge everybody to take whatever measures they can to pay in full, that you pay whatever you can, set up an installment agreement as soon as possible to make sure that you're taking care of your tax obligations. And, you know, do not underreport income or anything of that nature. You want to make sure that you do your taxes correctly and timely and pay what you need to do. Just to give you an example, and this, you know, because this applies to the state as well as the federal, I had an issue with a missing payment for my state taxes. Got a notice that I had sent in an estimated tax payment. Nobody could find it. I ended up talking yesterday, finally, after several calls and emails, to the state of Indiana equivalent of their taxpayer advocate. And lo and behold, they were able to do some work and find where my payment was. But, you know, I was concerned because I didn't want to have that situation hanging over me, because as an IRS employee, we're supposed to be paying our just financial obligations. And I did, and I wanted to make sure that that was recorded correctly. So please, 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 file on time, pay in full if you owe. If you can't, pay what you can and set up that installment agreement to make sure that you are in compliance, because otherwise, you know, there could be some healthy consequences, you know, up to and including removal if you don't do certain things. So just want to make sure that everybody is always reminded of that. I know I sound like a broken record, but we see it every year where people either don't file or don't pay on time or don't worry about it, things of that nature. Can you file an extension? You absolutely can. If you're going to owe, pay what you owe by that April 15th and file that extension. Then make sure you get that return filed timely by the extension date. So just make sure that you do things correctly to keep yourself out of trouble.
Yeah, people think we're beating a dead horse. Duncan and I do this because I can say with some authority, both as a union rep and as a manager, I always had people who had problems with tax compliance. There's always somebody out there. So prevention is always the best solution to this, and that's why we beat this. It's not a dead horse. For a lot of you, it is, and for those of you who are compliant, God bless you. But for those, you know, if you're not compliant, it's a serious matter as an IRS employee. You know, the government expects IRS employees to be compliant. If you're not, you have to pay the consequences. It's a much higher standard than the rest of the public. It just is the way it is. One last comment I'd like to get from you, Duncan. We have a primary election coming up in May for Indiana, and there are other, of course, we're getting into election season for a presidential election in the coming months. Remind us again about the Hatch Act and how what we can and cannot talk about in the workplace in terms of politics.
Yeah, this is one of those things, and it seems like over the last, you know, 7 or 8 years, the line has gotten blurred, but I don't want it to be blurry at all for federal employees to possibly get caught up in something. You know, if you are for or against a particular candidate, you absolutely have that right to do that. You absolutely have that right to voice that opinion. But for God's sakes, do not do it on government time or in a government workplace. You know, and you're saying, well, I'm at home, I can go ahead and post on Facebook. Okay, are you off the clock? If it's during your working hours and you're not on leave, don't post those kinds of things on Facebook because they can be tracked. You know, we want everybody to participate in the political process. And, you know, I know that there are a lot of folks who are very fervent about this and, you know, have strong opinions, which is great. And you're absolutely entitled to it, whatever your opinion is. But you want to make sure that you are very mindful of those rules. You know, don't come in wearing a button for a particular candidate. Don't wear a shirt or a hat backing a particular candidate or that's associated with a particular candidate. Those could be considered violations of the Hatch Act, and those could potentially get you removed from the service. So we just want to make sure that you, you know, your advocacy, if you have that, is done at the proper time and the proper places.
Okay, Duncan, time for your final comment.
My final comment is, you know, something that happened to me this morning when I was having a discussion with my wife, Kim. And, you know, at one point I just looked at her and I said, you need to embrace your awesomeness. And she just sort of looked at me and I said, and she was like, what? And I said, you know, you do everything great. And she does. I said, whether it's work, whether it's home, whether it's, you know, talking to family or friends, you know, embrace who you are, embrace that you do a great job, except when you hear from me that you're doing a great job. And, you know, I think that when we're talking with family or friends and they do something that is over and above, they need to be A, recognized for it, and B, accepted, and not in a braggadocious sort of way or cocky sort of way. But, you know, Larry, you do an absolutely awesome job in communications for the Chapter 49. And, you know, it is so very appreciated by not just me and not just by our members, but folks nationwide. And, you know, you should be recognized for that, that you do a wonderful job and are appreciated. So, you know, and embrace the awesomeness. So if you have family or friends that are doing something great, let them know. Let them know how appreciated they are, that they ought to recognize it, and they ought to wear it well.
See, does that mean I get paid now?
I'm sorry, what, who? Did you say something? I missed something.
Yeah, it's interesting how you lose your hearing at very opportune moments. I got a little more serious to talk about my final comment, because there's a group that's done such wonderful work around the world. It's called the World Central Kitchen, and it was started by a man who was once a chef at the White House named Jose Andres. Wonderful man. You'll see him interviewed on TV quite often, and does wonderful work around the world. He goes into places where there is a serious disaster, but he does something else. He goes into war zones and tries to feed people where it's difficult to get food in. And the fog of war can be very serious, and going into a war zone is always fraught with danger. And he just lost 7 very important key people in his organization who are working to feed people in Gaza, where things are almost to the point of famine, as the United Nations has described it. Now, the Israelis have done an investigation. They've apologized, but it's still it's so difficult to accept the deaths of 7 wonderful aid workers who are only trying to feed people who are desperately hungry in a war zone where food is difficult to come by. It's an international tragedy when something like that happens. And I just, if you want to embrace people and compliment the people who'd risk their lives to go into a place like a war zone and feed people. What World Central Kitchen does is so wonderful, and it's such a tragedy to lose those 7 people. I think they should be recognized for all the work they do all around the world. Gaza is just one place where they have gone into a very dangerous situation and gone in to provide badly needed food for people. So although it's a tragedy, I think we need to recognize the awesomeness of the people who are willing to do something like that. So on that note, we thank you for once again watching, listening our Chapter 49 podcast. You listen to Duncan Giles, our chapter president, and I'm Larry Lannon, a volunteer with Chapter 49. We try to keep it a weekly podcast. Didn't make it last week, but, you know, that happens at times. But in the meantime, please be safe and be kind.